Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hi, I'm Josh from the What Culture Gaming podcast, and we're currently sponsored by EE's Performance Enhancing Broadband, the only broadband made just for gamers. With the fastest speeds in the most places across the UK, plus game mode that lets you select your local servers and boost your broadband to turbocharge your gaming, it takes your gaming experience to the next level. So, don't waste your time struggling to keep up with your mates because your router is on a go slow. Search EE Broadband. Selected games. To verify faster speeds in more places across the UK, visit ee.co.uk/claims. 1.6 gigabytes per second available with our busiest home bundle, including smart Wi-Fi Plus and Wi-Fi Enhancer with game mode. 43.7% UK availability.
Welcome to Flame On. I am not Pat the Bear, as you may have already gathered. I am Brian. I am the once and current host. Unfortunately, Pat had other things going on and also I think hadn't really been keeping up with the medias, at least that we wanted to talk about. So he's taken a much and well-deserved breather today. But as always, I am joined by my colleagues and cohorts across the mighty United States. I think I will go on my left. I have Eric.
Hello.
And on my right, I have BJ.
What's up?
And I think both of you are in your respective homes. Is that correct? No one's on travel?
Correct.
Yes, I'm in Florida where it's hot as fuck right now.
What's the temperature? Let's do our weather check. This is very important.
I mean, I think it hit triple digits today, I think.
Gross.
And then BJ, you're in the mighty state of Georgia. How hot are you?
It's so I'm very hot, but that's according to bathroom wall. I think today it was like 90, like 92, and then now it's like the temperature free falls as soon as the sun goes down. So I think it's supposed to be like 65 tonight, and then it's supposed to like. It's like 50 at night and then like 90 in the middle of the day. So it's kind of a roller coaster, but I love it.
I appreciate the states that, unlike Florida, actually do get cool at night. And not that Florida doesn't occasionally, but in Seattle right now.
I mean, it gets
right
down
now,
into the 70s, which is kind of bearable.
But at least
it's still the humidity. Well, I mean, right, we don't lose the humidity at night.
You don't lose the humidity, so it keeps that heat. It's like a warm envelope or like a warm blanket that just doesn't go away. But like, you know, moving out here to the West Coast and specifically Seattle, like the highs are in the 70s and we're in the beginning of June and the lows are like still in the low 50s, upper 40s. And that is so refreshing at the end of a long, hot day that, oh, by the way, the sun doesn't go down until like 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, it's bad. Anyway, all that to say, I do appreciate that difference in temperature. And
you have the sun currently, right?
We do, actually. I'm looking out my window. It is a beautiful blue sky day. It was a little cloudy this morning, a little marine fog layer that finally went away. But, this weekend was gorgeous. We had our first Pride activity. Wait, no, sorry. Last weekend we had our first Pride activity. This weekend we had more Pride activities. I don't know. There's so much Pride in June. It's just too much to keep track of. Have either of you done any Pride activities yet? Gay Days, Tidal Wave, anything else?
No, I know Gay Days happened last weekend, but I didn't do anything.
So this past weekend was Kink Down South here in Atlanta. And then I'm going to Tidal Wave next week. out in Palm Springs where it's like 113 and during the day and like now, 40 at night.
I thought Tidal Wave came back to Florida. Am I mistaken about
that? No. Last year it was in Vegas, and then this year it's in Palm Springs, and who knows where it'll be next year.
So was there a bear gathering in Florida last weekend of any kind? Because I thought I saw pictures of friends cavorting and doing things, and Varla Jean was actually in Orlando like a weekend or two ago.
I know last year, because of Tidal Wave moving to Vegas, something got thrown together as a bear event, but don't know if.
So I'd say get your cups of tea ready. There's a lot going on here. So a long time ago in Florida, far, far away, Gay Days used to be a combination of two events, one Magical Weekend and Gay Days. Then you had Tidal Wave, which was just a water park thing. Then Tidal Wave got a hotel. And then you still had Gay Days combined with this other event. Well, then Gay Days and this other event split off. And that's one Magical Weekend, Gay Days, and Tidal Wave. Those were the three kind of events going on. Then Tidal Wave left. And one Magical Weekend is the one that does all the Disney-themed stuff. Like if the park ever gets rented out, it's one Magical Weekend that does that. So one Magical Weekend has a contract with Disney for the Riptide Party, which is the water park party. However, in order to keep a contract with Disney like that, you have to have a certain number of people guaranteed, like a certain number of tickets sold. And Tidal Wave teamed up with One Magical Weekend to keep those numbers up. Well, when Tidal Wave left, One Magical Weekend cobbled together Bear Jamboree. And then Bear Jamboree is now the kind of bear thing that happens during Gay Days and One Magical Weekend.
Wow. Didn't know about that. And I mean, it's a fascinating bifurcation of the bear and other social event structures that we all love and enjoy. And good to know. And it explains the whole mystery of, and so I think Varla Jean was there for Gay Days then for something. And I don't know, maybe Varla was just, I don't know. I think it was a performance. I think she performed somewhere. But yeah, well, more Pride to come. So Australia, when is Atlanta Pride?
Atlanta Pride is the weekend, either the same weekend as Orlando Pride the weekend after. It depends on when National Coming Out Day falls, which is my birthday. Sometimes it's Orlando Pride happens, and then the next weekend Atlanta Pride happens. But they're both on that around October is when Atlanta's happens.
Which is so amazing, as we said earlier, because of how effing hot it is. But the rest of us in the U.S. celebrate Pride in the month of June. So happy Pride, everyone. We're going to be partying. There's like four or five cities around me that are doing Pride on different weekends throughout June. So yeah, I'm going to be, I'm trying to collect all my stamps. I think they do passport, like the stamps in Japan, right? Isn't that a thing? You go to Pride and you get your stamp book out and they give you the big rainbow stamp. Is that?
No? Which part of your body are they stamping?
Or what are they using to stamp it with?
Get your tramp stamp.
Oh, is it a mushroom stamp?
I think it's a mushroom stamp. That's where I was going. Actually, we were talking about going to Barracuda, and Barracuda, the organizer there, Matt, I believe, he loves to get people's penises in his eye. Like, that's his claim to fame. Social media, marginally, probably somewhat inappropriate in a professional context, but whatever. You know, it's fine. It's fine. Everybody's fine.
I hope he's on Doxy Prep.
At least the eye equivalent, whatever the
eye drops. Just,
you don't want to mess with the eye clap. Let me tell you, that's a goopy nastiness. Anyway, we are here to talk about pop culture and other ancillary topics. But as is our tradition here on Flame On, we are going to go around the horn and talk about one amazing thing that we have experienced in pop culture in the last however long it's been. And for me, it's been quite a while, I feel like. So I don't know. I probably have a couple to catch up on. But I'm going to start again just because it's nicely laid out for me here, left to right. I'm going to start with our dear friend Eric to tell us what exciting thing are you going to share with us?
So it's kaiju movie time, because Godzilla Minus One came to Netflix last week or the week before. And so as I haven't been to the movie theater in a long time, so I missed out on seeing this in the theater, either the colorized or the black and white version. And so I did see this in color on Netflix. I think black and white is also going to be coming to Netflix soon. I hope so, because that would be neat to see. But Godzilla Minus One is the 2023 Japanese epic kaiju film written, directed, and with visual effects by Takashi Yamasaki, produced by Toho Studios and Robot Communications, and distributed by Toho. So this is separate from the Godzilla Kong American kaiju verse that is happening. This is back to the Japanese Godzilla produced films. And this one happens at the end of World War II, and stars the main character is a kamikaze pilot, Koichi Shikishima. And he first encounters Godzilla when he takes his kamikaze plane to an engineering outpost on a small Japanese island, saying that there's an issue with his plane, so he can't complete his mission. But in truth, he kind of backed out of fulfilling his kamikaze duty. And that night, Godzilla comes ashore, and again, he kind of chickens out when he's commanded to use his airplane's gun to shoot at Godzilla, and Godzilla ends up trampling the outpost and killing almost all the engineers. And so as he comes home after the war, he has severe survivor's guilt. The town he's from was completely destroyed in the war. And his parents are gone and his whole village is destroyed. So he's kind of a war orphan at that point. He ends up encountering a young woman, Noriko, who is kind of also, all her family is gone from the war, and she's taken in a baby that was orphaned by the war as well. And they become this makeshift family, just trying to survive. He eventually gets a government job clearing out. Mines in the bays around Japan that were left there by both the Japanese and American navies. And eventually Godzilla comes back, and he's grown more angry after additional nuclear tests that have gone on. And they encounter Godzilla in their little minesweeper boat. And while they do injure Godzilla with a mine and blow half of his face off, which is pretty crazy, Godzilla just regenerates and then destroys a aircraft carrier, or battleship, rather. And he ends up going on land and destroying the town of Ginza, I think is the name of the town.
Like the Ginza in Tokyo?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
The area of Tokyo.
Wow.
In that attack, Noriko is thought to be lost and presumed dead. And so Shikishima is just angry at the world. He's angry at survivor's guilt. He's angry at Godzilla for kind of destroying part of his newfound family. And so he just has this personal vendetta against Godzilla. And in this second half of the film, all of the kind of ex-naval officers come together to come up with this plan to defeat Godzilla. And I don't want to completely ruin everything that happens, but it's very emotional. It's very well done. The effects are amazing. As it did win the Academy Award for visual effects this year at the Oscars.
And oh my God, I forgot about that. It's the same. So yeah, this, I was going to say, they did, Toho did another live action Godzilla film that was Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, I think that was back in like 2016. Yeah, 2016. I didn't see that one.
That was the guy who did Evangelion, Hideki Anno. He did that movie. And he did a couple other Shin characters. But yeah, I'm interested in this film because it deals with an area, an interesting period of time, which is, I'm assuming, the American occupation of Japan a little bit.
It's never specifically shown the American occupation. Huh. It's just post World War II, and it's focused solely kind of on the little village where the soldier goes back to, and just kind of
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's interesting. It's super emotional for a Godzilla for a kaiju movie. I honestly was floored at how emotional and how in depth they made the people, because that's the one critique. That's the thing about kaiju movies is when they did that 2000 where they did that Godzilla movie with Matthew Broderick.
Oof.
Which
99.
Was
it, yeah, 99.
Was it
99? Yeah, 99 Godzilla.
Where,
yeah.
It was more focused on the people and Godzilla's just kind of there. Mm-hmm. And like is more like a natural disaster than like which I think when you do a kaiju movie, you kind of have to do it like a natural disaster, and you do need to concentrate on at least a couple of characters. You don't know, like the problem with the 99 Godzilla movies, I felt like the cast was way too big. And they tried to replicate Independence Day sort of. Whereas with the more modern Godzilla and Kong movies, they have kind of somewhat successfully made the kaiju kind of their own characters. One of the most recent Godzilla movies, I was super sad Mothra died. I was like, no. And then Godzilla
was the newest. Was that the newest Godzilla Kong?
No, that wasn't the newest one. That was the, it was the, I think the, it was because there was the Kong movie. And then I think it was, I don't know if it was Kong Skull Island, but there was one of the Kong movies happened. Then they did a Godzilla movie. And it was that Godzilla movie, which I think was King of the Monsters, which was kind of, they kind of had two separate movies and then they combined them.
Yeah. Because there was the Godzilla movie with Bryan Cranston. That was kind of the first one that was just called Godzilla. And then there was Kong Skull Island. And then they did another Godzilla, King of the Monsters. And then it was Godzilla v. Kong.
Yeah. And then they've got Godzilla Kong. I can't remember what the new one is, but it's Godzilla Kong something.
It's like a new empire, new kingdom.
Something like that. And so you've kind of got it where they almost, because they definitely have Kong as a character. You know, they have Godzilla as a character. So it's a really weird mix. But then when you go back to his roots, especially with this movie, it's just the human characters are so well written. You're invested in them kind of going through this, like, that, first of all, they're still kind of cleaning up from World War II. Then you've got this fucking giant ass lizard that's just like, no, fuck you guys. So it's written and done in such a way that's like just amazing. It was really like, I watched, a friend of mine that watched it, she was just like, oh, I fucking cried. She's like, I've never thought I would ever cry in a Godzilla movie, but I fucking bawled.
It's very emotional. And you see how devastated the country, well, I mean, at least the rural country was after the war. And when Godzilla starts attacking, like, everyone acknowledges, like, the other governments acknowledge that Godzilla is a thing, but they say, like, especially they name drop the Americans. They're like, well, the Americans aren't going to send help because of the Soviet movements. And the if there's any sort of a military movement from Americans, that'll set off the Soviets and vice versa. So nobody's going to come to help. So you just got to figure it out yourself. And I didn't necessarily recognize any of the actors, but the lead actor, I'm going to butcher this name, Ryunosuke Kamiki, has a pretty long filmography, and he's also done a lot of voiceover work. He was the lead guy in the movie Your Name. Way back in 2001, he voiced the baby in Spirited Away, the big baby.
Oh, God. Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And in the last Evangelion movie, he played adult Shinji.
Mm. Oh, okay.
But yeah, this is a great movie. Everybody should watch it. Watch it subbed. Don't watch it dubbed.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It's on Netflix, right?
Like I mean, I pressed play on Netflix, and the second I heard English, I was like, nope. So Netflix is preset to be English, so you got to watch out for them.
They don't have a very good history of dubbing things properly. Like, there's been a hand, like, I remember when they dubbed Squid Game, it was like, when you watched it, it was definitely, you lose a lot of the emotional stuff, but they've got a very bad history with, like, especially, I think it was there when they redubbed Evangelion, like, that one turned out terrible. And it was like, I remember somebody did an interview with somebody at Netflix, and it was 100% like some random executive that was like, my grandkids like the animus, so I decided to take over the project, and then like did zero research or anything as far as like selecting actors and writing the script properly. It was a whole thing. So they don't really have a very good history with their dubbing.
So it's interesting, I guess. The Toho, I mean, we talked a little bit about the American stuff they're doing or franchising with America, but this is all part of the Reiwa era. Oof. From 2016 to present, like, this has sort of been a rejuvenation of Godzilla in various projects, and this Godzilla Minus One, or I'm assuming it's Gojira Minus. I think I've heard them say the title in Japanese, and it was Gojira Minus One in like that Japanese phonetic way. But this is the most successful of all of the films they've had ever for all the Godzilla films. It's definitely something I need to check out. I'm interested in this Takashi Yamazaki. I was trying to figure out what else he had done, if he had done it. Oh, he did Space Battleship Yamato. Okay, that was pretty good. Stand By Me, Doraemon. I did not watch that, although I did watch one of the more recent Doraemon movies, and I was like, wow, Doraemon can get a little dark. Sort of surprised. I'm excited to see this. And when I go,
he also did the newest Lupin the Third movie in 2019.
The First is the subtitle. Yeah, I used to watch and read a lot of Lupin manga and anime, so I definitely... I'm interested in that. When I was in Japan earlier this year, my brother had asked me to find some Minus One merchandise, and it was actually hard to find. I think because it had come out like a little over a year ago. At that point, it was just, but I did find some gotcha upon Godzilla, you know, in that style. Yeah, no, thanks for that. I really, I'm excited to see this at some point. Would you give it a certain number of flames out of five, you think?
Probably like... I would probably give it 4.75 flames.
Oh, wow.
It's really, really good movie.
Really good. Well, all right. And BJ, you saw it too. So what would you give it?
Oh, I give it a 5 out of 5. Like, absolutely. Like, honestly, if I ever encountered somebody that had never seen a Godzilla movie, like in the wild, they do exist. But if I had ever encountered somebody that has never watched a kaiju movie, this would be the one I would show them. I would show them this and then be like, now you can go backwards, but definitely I would show them this one. And then I would be like, if you want to watch an American one, King of Monsters isn't bad. Or the Cranston one. I would actually, the Cranston one was pretty close. Like that one was pretty good. And that one was fairly emotional. So I would be like, here's like a good representation of the Japanese one. Here's a good representation of the American one. Have at whatever you want. There's like 60, 70 years of Godzilla content for you to devour. Have at it.
I was thinking Pacific Rim would be a good one too from the American side. Not that it's in the Godzilla universe. I mean,
that's a good kaiju movie for sure.
That is a very good kaiju movie. That is a very good giant robot / kaiju movie.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean it's got a little bit of both. Also, did you guys watch the Monarch show? I think it was on Apple TV.
I did not watch the Monarch show.
No, I meant to.
I mean it's in that same cinematic universe of the Godzilla in America and Kong and all that crap. Yeah, so you know, I heard good things. Got Matt Fraction on the writing staff. I think he's one of the executive producers. I was like, "Wow, good for him. That's pretty cool." All right. Well, Monarch. It's in my head. Godzilla minus one. Thank you both. And now BJ, what you got for us?
So unfortunately, what I have for us when I was in Hawaii, working the first 2 days, I was just destroyed as far as like my sleeping schedule goes and everything. Like I was exhausted and I was like, well, I guess it's time for bed. And it was like 6:30. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a long evening. So I do what I always do, and I pretty much get ready for bed, fire up YouTube on my phone, and I just start looking at random things. And I came across this little segment. This woman does like little animations for all sorts of cute little things, or horror things. She does a lot of horror animations. And I came across this part of a musical called Nerdy Prudes Must Die. And I fell down the rabbit hole, and it was called Star Kid Productions, which has done a couple of random you can see it live if you're in the LA area, but generally they post their musicals on YouTube. And I found out Nerdy Prudes Must Die is actually the third part of a kind of anthology of horror comedy musicals, which is nuts. The first one being The Man Who Hates Musicals, which is done in the vein of like a 1950s sort of alien attack. Then you've got Black Friday, which is a bit darker. It's like a very dark comedy, sort of almost like a Lovecraftian sort of thing. And then you've got Nerdy Prudes Must Die, which is in the vein of like an 80s slasher flick. And it is absolutely unhinged. It is 100% like it is the 100% a dark comedy. And it is when a group of nerdy prudes at Hatchetfield High accidentally complete an ancient evil ritual, they unleash a powerful spirit into the halls of the school, and it doesn't like nerds. And that's it. It is 100%, like, even down to how the music is done, like, some of, like, the synth and everything, you are watching a 80s musical. And it is absolutely hilarious. You can watch it for free on YouTube. I think I sent it to you, Brian. And you can watch it for free on YouTube. Right now, I think it was released. It was released last year. And StarKid Productions usually reuses a lot of its actors. Although the main villain, Max Yeagerman is the main villain's name, just to give you an idea of how they go with this. But the actor that plays him, Will Branner, is like kind of new to StarKid Productions, but you actually will see a lot of these actors. I believe it's called Smosh. They do a lot of like internet videos. They do like one where Try Not to Laugh. They've done a lot of the original Try Not to Laugh videos. But Will Branner, relatively newer actor. He hasn't done a ton, which I appreciate. I really like it when they kind of discover when projects like this discover new talent. But yeah, it's Angela Giriantana. Wow. I actually pronounced that right. She's another big one. She's like, she's done a bunch of stuff, a lot of voiceover work. Yeah, Smosh is the internet series or TV series that she's on a lot of the time. That's where I recognized her from. She's done, she was on a TV series called Minx. Yeah, she was on Two Broke Girls. She's been in every StarKid productions, and a lot of the other actors are in the StarKid productions series or musicals. What's super interesting is that there is a supernatural element to this, which deals with sort of these eldritch creatures, kind of like between hell, between the real world. And a lot of those appear in the other musicals or shorts they have. And they have all of them make an appearance in Nerdy Prudes Must Die. So yeah, it's really, really, really interesting. Right now it's still making the people are just kind of rediscovering it. But no, it's honestly, if you like any indie stuff, Eric, have you seen any of their stuff or heard of them?
Yes. I'm a bad StarKids fan, but I'm an old StarKids fan because their very first production was a Harry Potter musical back in 2009.
Oh, my God. That was them.
I think they're University of Michigan. And this is where Darren Criss is from. He played Harry Potter in a Harry Potter musical. And that's kind of how he got discovered to then be on Glee, et cetera, et cetera. So StarKid has been around a long time doing theater productions. Also, one of their most viral moments is from their musical Firestarter, where it's a song, I don't really want to do the work today. I don't want to do the work today. I don't really want to do the work today.
So I believe that's them. Holy shit.
Yeah, StarKid has been around a long time, but I really have not fully watched any of their productions other than the first Harry Potter musical. I've also heard Twisted is very good, which is kind of a reverse take on Aladdin, where it's focused on Jafar. I hear that's really good. I've heard a lot of good things about this, I guess, trilogy of things, because the guy who didn't like musicals, I've heard a lot of rumbling about and stuff. But
yeah, so. I watched a couple of clips of that, and as of right now, all three of them, I believe, are still on YouTube to watch for free. But I think I watched Nerdy Prudes Must Die like two or three times because some of the moments, it's not a musical where you're going to like every single song. It's a musical where every single song has just these delicious moments, either the harmonies, One of my favorite songs is the summoning, where they're summoning all of the creatures from the Black and White, and they say their names, and they've got these very eldritch, like Pocotho, Nibble and Nephilim, Tiplotak. The names of the creatures are woven into the song in such a way where the accompanying singers in the background are like, they start off very softly, kind of whispering each creature's name, but as they're working through the names, they get louder and more demanding, and it's just this really nice build. And what makes me sad is I didn't watch them all the musicals in order, because the audience, because they do, it's like a live taping. The audience goes absolutely fucking nuts when one of the Wiggly is kind of his nickname, one of the terrors, is like, "Hello, Wendy Wens," and that's how he talks. He always, even though he's like this horrific creature, he always talks like in a really cutesy way, and everybody loses their minds in the audience, because a lot of people have been following this for a while. So honestly, if you want to get into this, you can watch the first two, because there's just some very loose threads, but it's more or less an anthology. The only thing in common really with all of them is the terrors that appear. But no, the music in Nerdy Prudes Must Die is just I'm 90%. I sent you the little animated thing, Brian, where it's right before Max claims his first victim, and he does this just so twisted little like musical section of the main title song, where he sounds like, because the actor can turn it on and off. He goes from like sweet, kind of sweet sounding and just like a high falsetto to this low, like scream. And it's just such a wonderful moment. And it's so dark. And it's like throughout the whole musical, there are these moments of comedy where everybody's laughing, but then the dark moments, people are quiet as hell. People are just, you could hear a pin drop. People are like, oh, okay. It gives you a nice little correction that you're watching a horror comedy. Like, and they balance it. The third one, Nerdy Prudes Must Die, balances it perfectly. So, if any of you out there listening, The Man Who Hates Musicals, Black Friday, Nerdy Prudes Must Die, and then they actually did a series of shorts, I believe called Nightmare Time. And that was during the pandemic. That was in 2020. But they did a series of shorts called Nightmare Time, where they have a narrator and then they have the actors kind of acting out the scene in each section. So definitely head to Star Kid Productions on YouTube and give yourself, pull up some popcorn, make it a Friday night musical night. It's good. I would give The Man Who Hates Musicals a 3.5 out of 5. I would give Black Friday a 4 out of 5, and I would probably give Nerdy Prudes Must Die a 5 out of 5.
Hi, I'm Josh from the What Culture Gaming podcast, and we're currently sponsored by EE's Performance Enhancing Broadband, the only broadband made just for gamers. With the fastest speeds in the most places across the UK, plus game mode that lets you select your local servers and boost your broadband to turbocharge your gaming, it takes your gaming experience to the next level. So, don't waste your time struggling to keep up with your mates because your router is on a go slow. Search EE Broadband. Selected games. To verify faster speeds in more places across the UK, visit ee.co.uk/claims. 1.6 gigabytes per second available with our busiest home bundle, including smart Wi-Fi Plus and Wi-Fi Enhancer with game mode. 43.7% UK availability.
You're not in business unless you're online. And you're not serious about being online unless you're with IONOS. They offer fast and flexible hosting, servers and cloud solutions for small and medium-sized businesses. IONOS is innovative, offering AI solutions such as website creation from scratch using just a few keywords, saving you time so you can focus on more important things. With their sustainable data center in Worcester, your digital growth and sustainability go hand in hand. Get started today at ionos.co.uk.
All right. I will definitely have to go back to the archives. BJ is very good at sending me.
I was going to say, I send you links all the time.
Many things to consider. And it is always a treasure trove of delightful and nightmarish things, as you would expect. It's probably why I don't remember half of them, because I think I watch some for about 5 seconds. I'm like, nope. But thank you. I do appreciate it. All right. Well, if you are, dear listener, enjoying what you are hearing, you should check out more of our show. All of the Flame On things, if you want to go find us in the various other socials, YouTubes, no TikToks really. I don't know, maybe a couple, but nothing really great. Instagram, all of it's up on our website, flameonshow.com. In addition, all the merch that we have, a few fun little designs and things you can wear, and also get printed on a bath towel, evidently. I've not done that yet, but it's definitely one of the options that our Threadless store lets you do. So please go check out our web presence, flameonshow.com. And above all else, tell a friend about our show. The algorithms these days, you can't trust it. It's going to lead you down the path to watching Mr. Beast and alt-right nonsense if you're not careful. So help your friends find the best content possible. Tell them about our show, and then we'll love you for it. And we mean that. All right. Well, I will keep mine relatively quick, though. It is the Star Wars that all the kids these days love. So this
Star Wars.
Here, honey, go buy a ticket to see the Star Wars. a great moment from Arrested Development. Anyway, so you all know we've talked about the various TV shows that now exist by way of Disney Plus from the Star Wars universe, and specifically the Star Wars universe as created by Dave Filoni, Jon Favreau, and other creators. Well, they're finally letting a few more people play in that space. And I don't know, a couple of years ago, they announced this new show that they were doing. And it was very, kind of like mysterious. And people were like, wait, what? Because they basically only said that it was not going to be set in any of the existing eras of the Star Wars universe that we had yet seen depicted on the big screen or the small screen. And of course, people lost their minds because we all thought, oh my God, they're doing Old Republic. They're doing Knights of the Old Republic, like all million of us dorks that love that game and related properties, comics prior. We're just so excited about seeing depicted. And then they started releasing a little bit more about it. It's created by Leslie Headland, who, if you don't know, did the Russian Doll series on Netflix, which is amazing. Wow. And she's a big old Star Wars nerd, just like the rest of us. In fact, she's a huge Star Wars nerd because she knew what Old Republic was. She was into it. But they decided, nope, Old Republic's not quite canon. Little bits of it are poking through, but like it doesn't really quite fit in the current Star Wars story the way it did prior to Disney buying the rights. So it's in the expanded universes, whatever you know that means. But point is, they're like, no, it's going to be set in the High Republic. And the High Republic, if you are a fan of the comics and some of the other media properties, is about a year or two old now. Media initiative that was like comics, books, across all of it, but not yet television until now, that depicts the prequel era Republic, I should say, but prior to the rise of Palpatine. So we're talking about 100 years in the Republic, heights of the Republic. That's why it's the High Republic, whatever. And it's about basically when the Jedi were on top, keeping peace in the galaxy, quote unquote, doing their martial arts Jedi stuff. And so it gives you this really kind of a, you might think kind of a boring era because, you know, there weren't very many major battles and wars and things like that, which we know that's never true. And it's kind of an interesting departure from some of the other types of shows that we've seen from the Star Wars world, where it's an adventure, but it kind of starts as a procedural. Like,
yeah,
if you stripped away all the genre, right, what are you left with? There's a murder, and then there is an investigation, and they're trying to hunt down the suspect.
They're cops. They're essentially cops.
They are the Green Lanterns of that era, which is just to say they are space cops, basically.
Yeah.
Space cop warrior priests. But what I do enjoy about this show, so it's an interesting take. I mean, this is definitely one of the most Star Wars-y shows that we've seen in a while, because it is all of the things that we have not necessarily had as much of, at least all in mass, and that's Jedis and lightsabers and space battles and, you know, stuff. So it's really kind of a neat setup. They've brought in some amazing acting casts. I was going through the list of people and like, why do I know them? Why do I know them? So the main character, May, is Amanda Stenberg. And I don't know her as well. BJ, have you seen her in other things? I think she's not unheard of, but I think she's relatively new. You know? Looks like she has been, yeah, relatively small. Oh, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Of course. Oh, I should have realized. That's a great movie. I just watched that not too long ago. But yeah, so Amanda Stenberg, great as character as May. And we're going to keep this relatively spoiler free, because there is some shenanigans and things that I don't want to ruin for everybody. But the first two episodes as we record this are out.
Yeah, but. I mean, so... She was in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. She was in The Hate U Give. Mm-hmm. That was a big one. But honestly, she was on an episode of Drunk History.
Bodies, 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 that was a pretty great movie. If you haven't seen it,
oh yeah,
I highly recommend that. Very much a sort of twist on the it came from inside the house, you know, murder.
She played Spider Bite in Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay.
She was the digital Spider Woman. She's popped up in a couple things. My thing that floored the ever living crap out of me,
mm-hmm,
was Manny Jacinto.
Yes. So I was going to get to that. I'm glad you mentioned, because a lot of people might didn't
recognize him. And I'm just staring at him like, why is he look so goddamn familiar to me?
So, and again, has done stuff. And when we say what you know him from, you're going to be like, oh, my God. But basically, he's kind of this like buddy assistant to May, who is pretty much the titular acolyte, at least we think. And is like, you know, it's her, you know, her helper, her not minion, but certainly her, I wouldn't say even mentor necessarily, but certainly a character that is supporting the journey of the acolyte. And the acolyte is basically the Sith, sort of, well, they haven't said Sith yet, I think formally, but it's very much the protege of a Sith Lord, at least. Again, all of this is what we're led to believe as of the second episode, and that could totally be pulled out from under us at any point, because I've heard there's some big twists that definitely happen that people didn't expect. So yeah, Manny Jacinto, what was his name in The Good Place?
Jason. He played Jason / Jianyu.
Yes, so he is that guy. And yeah, as night and day a role as you can imagine. Totally didn't clock him at all. I also didn't clock Charlie Barnett, who plays Yord Fandar. And evidently Yord has a huge following online, because I guess, you know, a lot of people are very into his physique. I think he is shirtless at one point briefly.
Oh yeah.
He was in Russian Doll, and it took me a while too, cause his hair looks ridiculous. I don't love it. He's the male foil to Natasha Lyonne's character in Russian Doll. He is the other one who gets like reincarnated and has to live their day again and again and again in the first season. So that's Charlie Barnett. He's another Jedi. Lee Joong Jae, who is also someone you might look at and kind of squint and think, okay, I think I know them from something. Squid Game. The main character in Squid Game. So fantastic Jedi master what's his Jedi Master name? I can't even find
Master
it.
Master Soul.
Soul, that's right, that's right. So it's very basic, very simple. It's Soul. Gosh, there was a few. Oh, Carrie Ann Moss, amazing, from The Matrix, of course, and many other things. But she plays Indara, who is this Jedi Master who has a badass fight in the first episode that is it sets the stage for what is to come, let's just say. And there's one more that Daphne Keene. And oh my God, because of all the makeup she's in, I was like, I don't know who she
almost looks so didn't familiar. Recognize her.
She's several different things, but most recently, His Dark Materials played oh my God, Lyta? Anyway, the protagonist of His Dark Materials. And I'm sorry, I'm sure some people are out there screaming at their podcast devices because I'm forgetting my Lyra. Oh my God, Lyra. I almost,
His Dark Materials
is one of my favorite shows or one of my favorite books of all time. So I'm like, oh, I got to get this right. Anyway, Lyra.
Yeah, she played Lyra there. And she was also Laura in the Logan movie.
Yeah. That's right. She did do that. And then again, great, great roles, very strong character. So I mean, the cast is stacked. Okay. Lots of mysteries by the second episode. All we know is the Acolyte is working her way through Jedi's, seemingly on a revenge, kind of like a Kill Bill revenge list of Jedi that did her wrong. So, you know, they're playing in the gray areas somewhat because they're not making her this like Sith bad. I think slightly more character than that, sort of bad Jedi in, Ahsoka.
Oh yeah.
You know, like a little bit more to go on, a little bit more of a, okay, you're pissed about this thing. And that totally makes sense. So I like that. I appreciate that. The Jedi are definitely not portrayed like they're not bad at all, but they are a little stilted and they're definitely a little, you can sort of see where the sort of underpinnings of their destruction are coming. Like they're just a little too comfortable and a little too
high and mighty. They're cops. Like,
I mean, is this an AJAB situation?
Oh no! I hope not. No, not AJAB. No.
But this, as far as the series goes, this is what I was wanting. Here's my thing. Clearly, the Jedi pulled some bullshit. They pulled some shit. They're a little too comfortable, and they're like, you've got the perfect. Here's the thing. Nobody that takes children. Specifically young, very impressionable children. I don't care whether they're being used or whether they're just being taught like an ideology. You can't really paint that in a good light. It bothered me in the prequels that all of the Jedi were super bothered about Anakin being so old and he was like 8. He was like 6 or 7. He was not old. By any reason, he was like a kid. He wasn't a teenager, but he was a kid. My thing is they've kind of been building this, like with Ahsoka. Ahsoka was older and she quit. You've got Osha. Osha was originally supposed to be a Jedi. She quit. You've got Anakin, who was believed to be too old to be able to become a Jedi, and he became the one that brought balance, because now we're seeing the imbalance is what we're seeing. We're seeing the imbalance of the High Republic, where the Jedi are not, they're essentially a philosophical paramilitary group that is effectively unchecked because their philosophy is one of balance and control. However, you've got that one Jedi that walked right in the room and was just like, yeah, throw her under the bus. We don't need anybody. We don't need our political enemies hearing about like somebody who is trained in our ways murdering people. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bitch, you're the problem. Like, so it's one of those things where that's why I want to see like the cracks in that facade, because then you've got what is his name? Yarden? Yord.
Yeah, Yord.
You've got Yord that is just like, you follow the rules, you do the rules, you follow the people. Like, he is very much of that ideology. But you can also see where he doesn't trust Osha. And by the end of this, by like around the second episode, he's like, oh no, she isn't responsible for this.
Yeah.
Something's
so there's a great collection of archetypes. I love the, again, I don't want to give away too much, but I love the Jedi Master that's basically in his little meditation position, and nothing can force field, nothing can touch him. And, you know, I think that it's, if we'll see how it keeps going. I don't think her list is very long, so I'm guessing that sort of just starts us out. But like the sort of episode of the week, or the how is she going to do it this time, if that's sort of a thing they try doing, that'll be interesting. Because the second episode felt like that. It was very like, well, she can't do this, so how is she going to like take him out? You know, and so that there's kind of an interesting problem to solve. But again, that's why we're being led along the path to be sympathetic to both sides in some ways, which is kind of an interesting commentary. The whole balance of the Force thing, I'm just going to throw this out there. Lucas doesn't agree with, I think, what everybody else thinks is the balance, because Lucas said recently, even he's like talking about the sort of differences in the way that Disney's have their stories have gone away. And he's like, it was never about the Sith balancing out the Jedi. It was more about the you know, Luke coming in and balancing out the negative parts of the Sith. And da, 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 da. It was just like, what? I don't know. I feel like if you set out this like amazing like mythology and all this stuff, but you kind of missed making that point clearer.
Yeah.
It's like,
was it originally a part of the like actual story?
I mean, he made it part of the prequels. Yeah. I mean, he definitely wanted this mythology of the Chosen One, or the balance of the Force and all that crap. But like, he's not like, oh no, Vader is the balancing actor, is the balance, because he had to wreck everything. It's like, no, it's not. I don't think that's what he meant. But anyway, point is, it's a great lesson in life. You can do everything you can to get your message, to leave your legacy, to do your thing that people can build on, but you absolutely cannot guarantee that they're even going to begin to understand what you did. And you could leave all the manuals and all the lore and all the crap, and they are going to get it wrong, and they are going to do their own thing. And so you just project that on every aspect of your life, on civilization, everything. And you go, yeah, that makes sense. That's like kind of how we're at right now with the
everything. I mean, honestly, they just need to go the Doctor Who route, and whoever's like show running their individual shows can build whatever message they want. But my thing that I really like about, the thing I've liked about some of the Star Wars stuff is that we'll start with the thing that I feel is awkward now. The stuff that's awkward now. So with Ahsoka, Ahsoka is effectively either Rebels season 3 or Clone Wars season 4. If you watched Clone Wars and Rebels, you have a bit more emotional ties to Ahsoka and a lot of the characters you encounter in the Ahsoka series. And all those were good. Rebels was great. Clone Wars was great. Bad Batch was great. And I loved Ahsoka. Like, I love that. But all those things are very intermixed and linked to the original trilogy in kind of a weird, actually to the prequels and the original trilogy in a very sort of in an intricate way. Mandalorian pretty much started out as its own thing, because the Mandalorian, as far as the story goes, is kind of the between the newer sequels and the original trilogy. So you've got kind of this gap filler that has not much to do really with like essentially the Skywalker family wrecking everything. And that's what I loved about Mandalorian. And then, of course, when Boba Fett showed up, I was like, no, get him out of here. I just want this character that doesn't have like he has loose ties to Luke only because of Grogu, but he has his own quest and his own thing he's doing. And I like that. And like, and that's why I like Acolyte is far enough removed from the original prequels that you can sit there and like, cause like I was going to say they had a Trade Federation ship in like the first episode. That was just kind of there.
We thought we'd see that again. I was like, right. Oh wow. We're going back to the slightly badly stereotypical. Well, but thankfully they didn't, they changed it up and they sidestepped that pitfall. I was very grateful about that.
but that's just it. So you can go and you can kind of craft your own story and build upon the lore in a way where it's kind of free from the pre-established rules. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's the thing, is the way people talk about Jedi, it only took 150 years for the entire universe to be like, a Jedi, what's that? Mm-hmm. That's all it took, was 150 years for people to be like, that's an extinct religion, whatever. Yeah. Like, the idea that the Force is a thing is just completely like, that's not real. So you have to wonder, and this is me hoping they go a bit deeper than they probably will, but you have to wonder if their universe on some level was ready to move on from them as like a group.
Yeah.
So I'm excited, because my thing is they always kind of touch on it. They touched on it with Ahsoka as a character in Clone Wars, where she was trained as a Jedi, but she does not see herself as a Jedi. If anything, she's the closest thing. Was it the gray path? She wants to help people. She wants to help people. She doesn't want to help the Jedi. She's like, I want to help people flourish. That's why she doesn't want to teach Grogu. She's like, if he wants to be a Jedi, he needs to go get taught by a Jedi. I am not a Jedi. Do not get those things confused. And even with Rey, is Rey's kind of, even though technically she was trained as a Jedi, she's very much like, yeah, sure, I'll teach somebody how to shoot lightning out of their fingers. Like, so it's this kind of idea of what's it going to look like if you don't have this kind of like, this is the way things always have to be. This is how it always should be.
Yeah.
And then once that's gone, what are you going to do?
Like, well, it's like we were saying, it's the whole morphing of these ideas, and you know, it's the telephone game basically writ large. And that's how you go from whatever the heck happened before the High Republic to Rey, which whatever she does next. So, I mean, yeah. I love seeing that. And that's why I like having things like the Old Republic and then the High Republic now, as like, we can totally do our own thing. We got to link it up. We get to see a Wookiee Jedi, which was another thing evidently Lucas was like, hard no, you're never going to see that. And you know, now thankfully we will. So I mean, no, it's Acolyte's been good, two episodes in, so early days. But if you are missing that Star Wars, but like, you know, again, sort of its own thing, don't have to worry about all the ties to other things in the universe, this is your show. You're going to love it. Curious to see if we get any good queer, you know, whatever queer representation we're going to get. I don't have exactly high hopes, because Disney better, but like they don't always make that a thing. And, you know, they certainly like to keep things, I guess, without any drama, but keep it like neutral, if you will. But I'm excited to see, maybe we'll get some queer representation finally. I think it's been good. I don't think we give it flames because it's TV, but if I did give it a flame, it's a medium high, I would say, heat. Not going to burn your fingers off, but it's pretty good. It's toasty, you know?
You won't keep your hand sitting on it.
No, definitely not. All right. Well, now we are at this point in our show where we are going to talk about what is giving us life. I'm going to, giving me life. There we go. I had to use the soundboard at least one more time because it's too cool not to, and we don't get these toys. Only Pat usually gets these toys. So we'll go back around. I'll start. I was almost going to talk about Interview with the Vampire. There were two shows this week, Interview with the Vampire and Doctor Who gave me some of the best queer television I've seen in a million years, and both of them were gripping and made me like gasp and also maybe tear up a little bit. We're gonna do a much deeper dive on Doctor Who at some point, I guess, once the season wraps. But if you are not watching Mr. Shudigatwa, and Russell Davies and all of the folks. I forgot the actress who plays Ruby Sunday. What's her name? Yeah, see, I'm horrible. If you're not watching the new Doctor Who, it's great. And it didn't start great. I think you'll hear when we do our deep dive. It definitely started pretty rough. Some interesting choices, but it has gotten so good in the last few episodes. I am holding my breath that it ends strong and we get a great two-part season finale to go out. Interview the Vampire, we haven't talked a lot about it since the first season. They are on the second season. It's funny, we were just watching the old movie with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. That does not hold up well. It doesn't.
No, it does not.
So Brad Pitt's horrible. I'm just going to be honest. Brad Pitt's really bad in it. But what they have done in this series, and now we're in the second half. So we're basically in Paris doing all of the stuff related to the theater troupe. If you're familiar with the books, if you're familiar with the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It is such an improvement. I don't even think just on the movie, which Anne Rice wrote the screenplay, which I didn't realize that either. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. It's so more queer and open and honest about relationships. And it's such a great, like, you strip away the vampire stuff and it's just, it's the queer experience in so many different aspects. And in this last episode, there is this just knockdown, drag out fight between two vampires that, you know, you could probably figure out if you wanted to, but it's so good. It's, we don't deserve this TV. And evidently a lot of people aren't finding it or watching it. I don't know. It's surprising because I think people just, if they knew what was happening in this show, like, I mean, it's just so good. And it deals with memory and manipulation and storytelling and just, it's a great show. It's probably, it's up there right now as one of my favorite shows that's on television. So I highly, and I would never have thought, if you had told me like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, especially, or more, you're going to love Interview with the Vampire, the TV show, I'd be like, you're insane. That is not a thing that even makes sense to me, but oh my God, it's so good. So yeah.
I mean, 10 years ago, you were just, you were still true blooding.
Well, right.
Oh my God.
This is True Blood. If True Blood was like a gothic horror romance, I mean, True Blood's got like romance elements and all that, but it's like not even close, but yes, you're right, that was that era. My then partner previous to he was a very big Anne Rice fan. We had lots of her books, we had lots of his or her son's books. Interview with the Vampire was definitely a thing in the house. I still did not ever watch it, evidently, because I was watching it the other day and I'm like, is that what happens? I don't remember that at all. Anyway, point is, I just would never have clocked that I would be into this, and it's just good TV. It's good queer television, as is Doctor Who. So that's what's giving me life. BJ, what about you?
So because Pat's not here, and I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't have like four things. I actually have. So we were talking about Kaiju, and I completely forgot that a new anime dropped called Kaiju Number 8. It takes place in a world where kaiju just pop up naturally out of nowhere. And there's a whole kaiju defense force. And it's about this 30-year-old, which is, it's actually a somewhat departure from most anime where the main character is like 16 or like in their 20s. This is a 30-year-old who has failed the exam multiple times. And he belongs to the kaiju cleanup crew. They're the people that actually go out and like pick apart the body so that builders can come in and rebuild the area that the kaiju like destroyed. And he usually gets put on intestine duty. And it's every bit as campy as you think it is. But through a happenstance, he meets this new kid. They're cleaning up a site, and there are these little things that are almost like parasites of kaiju, and one pops up that was missed by the defense force and almost kills them. He ends up saving him, and the kid tells him that they raise the age limit for the defense force to 30. So he's got one more shot to get in there. And right before he tells the kid, he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to do it. This little thing flies in his mouth and he literally becomes like a human-sized kaiju. And what ensues is probably one of the funniest moments of anime I've ever witnessed, where he's like trying to make normal expressions, but he just keeps getting scarier. He touches the wall and like busts out the window. And he's just like running, trying to like change his form, change himself back to normal. But he keeps morphing in the weird shapes. It's a whole thing. And he ends up joining the Defense Force. I think they're up to 8 or 9 episodes right now. It's being released on Crunchyroll in real time. So it's like the afternoon of in the US, it's in the afternoon, I think on Wednesdays from when it airs in Japan. It pops up on Crunchyroll, but it's absolutely, honestly, the funny moments are really funny. And it's the thing is he's joined the Defense Force, but the Defense Force is 100% like, we're going to kill all kaiju. We don't care if it's a friendly one, we will murder them. So it's a lot of his two friends on the Defense Force trying to be like, tone it down, take it easy. Don't out yourself. And then before I went to Hawaii, Childish Gambino, otherwise known as Donald Glover, of Community fame, dropped a new album. He said he wasn't going to drop an album for a while. He said he was taking a step back from music, and he actually dropped a brand spanking new album and a new concert, a new tour. So that was really, really groovy to listen to. It's got some very like all the songs almost seem like a completely different genre from one another. So it's really good. I'll probably share his main single music video he released. I'll probably drop that up.
Yeah, please share that on our Facebook and our socials, whatever. I watched the video right before we did the recording, and I love the choreography is fantastic. It's giving drag. It's giving some, not burlesque. I don't know. There's just something it's doing. It's got like a little bit of all the single ladies going on. It's so fast and so good. And you're just like, what can Danny Glover? Oh God. What can Donald Glover not do? Cause I also just watched the first episode of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Cause I hadn't seen that yet.
Oh yeah.
He's just so freaking talented. So
he's really talented.
I'm excited to hear the rest of the album. And what's the song called? Bigfoot, Littlefoot.
Littlefoot, Bigfoot.
Littlefoot, Bigfoot.
And then my other favorite song from the album is Hunted, and Algorithm. Algorithm is so it's almost electronic, and it's kind of dark. And but I love Algorithm. Algorithm's really good. And Hunted is 100% resonates with me on a level that a specific recent episode of Doctor Who resonated with me. And I too can't wait to talk with you on that as well.
Oh yeah. that's going to be a fun discussion when we get to our Doctor Who minisode.
I'm going to try not to start screaming.
Oh, you have every right to. So yeah, I'm really excited about that new album. And yeah, if you haven't seen that video, please share that with the world, BJ, because that such good
absolutely
stuff.
Absolutely will.
All right, Eric, you're up. What you got for us that is giving you life?
So it's been a little bit since the last roundup and one-ups. So in that time, the full-length Wicked trailer dropped. And so I've watched that a lot. So that's... it's kind of leveled off now, so I'm not watching it as much. But what's currently giving me life is on Dropout, and I know, surprisingly, I'm hyping up a Dropout show, but it's just such a good service, and everyone should get it. But their new show, Smarty Pants, which is kind of like humorous TED Talks, in which... each episode, 3 people get up and do a presentation on different subjects. In which, like, the first episode, the subjects were, when is the happiest birthday? Which cartoon characters who are invited to the cookout. And vegetables don't exist.
Did Pat do that one? I feel like that's one he would have co-sponsored.
I mean, the kind of premise of that wasn't that these objects aren't real. It's that the fact that vegetables was actually a made-up term by the Dole Corporation and is not an actual scientific term. It's just a cooking term.
Conspiracy theory. I love this.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That makes perfect sense. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but it's these are all comedians who are doing these presentations, and it's a lot of fun. Also, the first episode of the two-part season six finale of Game Changer came out, which this finale is a parody of The Circle, and it's a lot of fun to see these people do that. Also, the last season or the last Fantasy High Junior Year, which is the Dimension 20 season, recently wrapped, which that was really good. And hopefully they'll end up doing a senior year, but it'll probably be like 5 years down the road from now. I'll just watch Dropout. It's just so good.
That's all on Dropout. Wow.
Yeah, it's all on Dropout.
We were at a party on Saturday, and a good friend of the show, Zan Christensen from Northwest Press, was literally talking about Smarty Pants. And we were like, oh, we got to get that Dropout show channel thing service again. Because, you know, we need another one. But it does sound like there's so much good content on that network.
It really is. It's like if I'm cooking, it's something I'll either play on my laptop or my phone while I'm like doing chores. Like if I'm doing stuff like folding laundry, it's kind of like the perfect thing. I mean, granted, a friend of mine has popped up on it like once or twice now. Chris Grace has popped up on it.
Oh, Chris is on there? Nice.
Uh-huh. I think he was on an episode of Make Some Noise.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, he did an episode of Actually, I think.
Oh, he did an episode of Actually. He also, I believe, his special, Chris Grace as Scarlett Johansson, I believe is he announced that it was recorded and will be put on Dropout TV.
Oh, yay!
Yeah, because they're going to be doing a series of stand-up specials from some of their regulars.
That's so great. I really wanted to see that, so I'm really – oh, that's exciting. Yeah. Good
I will stuff. Actually look it up and see if it's on there now.
We should, before that airs, we should see if Chris wants to come on and talk about it, because that would be pretty cool. You should work your magic, see if that's something he might want to enjoy.
My magic?
I don't know. You know him better than I do. You went to his wedding. Like, you went to like their wedding.
I did go to their wedding.
I didn't go to their wedding.
But I don't know if he's like actually famous. Like, does he have an agent?
Famous. I just want to hear about where the show came from. I mean, he's taken it to all these fringe festivals and big cities. Like, he's done this show. And again, this is like inside baseball, but like seeing social media posts and seeing people post about their stuff, you think, oh, that's cool, that's neat. And then when they catch on and you go, oh crap, people are really digging this stuff, like it's just neat. It's a neat it's like seeing, you know, Cena Grace rise to the
I'll pitch a podcast episode called Buy My Stuff, and he can just sit here and talk about all of his projects.
There you go.
And we'll just do everything we can to like just hawk everything.
Just pitch it all.
We'll call it Buy My Stuff, and it'll with special guest Chris Grace, and then we'll do Buy My Stuff with like other people we know doing projects and everything.
Oh,
I like that idea.
That's the shameless, and why not? Because good for them.
And that's the subtitle, Shameless and Why Not.
Shameless and Why Not. In this economy, Shameless and Why Not. Well, thank you all for listening and this very special triad edition, if you will, thinking of Doctor Who's villain coming up. You have been listening to Flame On Show. Again, please go to flameonshow.com. All of our cool socials are there. Sometimes we post good stuff. You know, you just gotta subscribe, and then you'll find out. It won't be constant. We're not obnoxious like some of those social people that just like to post all the time. But when it's important, you'll get something from us, and hopefully the algorithm will actually let you know that we posted, because that also doesn't happen anymore. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening. And on that very uneventful sort of deflated note, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Josh from the What Culture Gaming podcast, and we're currently sponsored by EE's Performance Enhancing Broadband, the only broadband made just for gamers. With the fastest speeds in the most places across the UK, plus game mode that lets you select your local servers and boost your broadband to turbocharge your gaming, it takes your gaming experience to the next level. So, don't waste your time struggling to keep up with your mates because your router is on a go slow. Search EE Broadband. Selected games. To verify faster speeds in more places across the UK, visit ee.co.uk/claims. 1.6 gigabytes per second available with our busiest home bundle, including smart Wi-Fi Plus and Wi-Fi Enhancer with game mode. 43.7% UK availability.